Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. Have you ever experienced, while reading a book or watching a show, a moment where a character does something and it's unexpected, you didn't predict it, but when you actually think about it for a moment, there's no other action that that character could have taken that would have made sense? Specifically, I'm talking about the kinds of decisions characters make that truly feel like they are, in retrospect, when looking back on them, the obvious decision based on who you understand that character to be. It's this weird phenomenon, and it's something that I first really noticed with George R.R. Martin's books, which are highly influenced by writers like J.R.R. Tolkien, of course, being that they are in the fantasy genre and have come afterwards. But his works are distinct and different in other ways. One of the things that I really, really appreciate about his character development is that when looking back on a situation and truly understanding who the characters are and what levers, I guess you can say, the characters will pull, what actions are within their scope, what motivates those individual characters, it seems often that what initially is a surprise decision is really just the fulfillment of who he was making the character to be from the beginning. And he has a really interesting knack for that. And I think it comes down to just a few very specific things. And before I get ahead of myself, this absolutely applies to this episode. In fact, we're just wrapping up the second chapter today, and there are two very important moments with both Bilbo and Gandalf, which lead into this. This is important because it doesn't just happen with George R.R. Martin and The Song of Ice and Fire. This happens with Tolkien. This happens with a lot of great writers, and it's something that it's almost like foreshadowing in reverse, if we think of it that way. The way this works is a character is sketched out in the author's mind, or maybe even physically on a piece of paper, and that character is given attributes, little details about that character that make the character who they are, including motivations, the things that they believe in, the things that they are willing to do, the things that they're not willing to do. And of course, this plays into character arcs and how the character could potentially change in the future. But all of that has to be established up front with a basic sketch of who this person is and what these details are. In artwork, for example, in cartoons, especially on projects where you have multiple artists and, like, you know, for example, working on The Simpsons or Ren and Stimpy. In fact, the detail that I'm going to go over here actually reminds me a lot about Ren and Stimpy and SpongeBob. And I promise this is going to have to do with The Hobbit, but just go with me here. When the artists are creating the characters, they sketch the characters from all these different angles with different expressions and things like that. And that creates a standard with which any other artist working on the project can draw to. And I know design standard is a word for this, but character design, there's a word that actually means this. I can't remember what it is. And so you take that as the definition of who the character is. But sometimes when there's an extreme moment of emotion or comedy, especially in cartoons like Ren and Stimpy, for those of us who are old enough to remember that, or SpongeBob, they will zoom in on a face and all of a sudden you'll see the same character but drawn in ridiculous proportions or super zoomed in and close up with detail that wasn't there in the original design. That's breaking the character design. And there's a reason why you would do that in art, and it elicits a certain reaction, but it also breaks what the character actually looks like. The same thing can be said in literature. You can have a character who fits a certain standard and sticks by that standard, but then at some point will break that standard. And sometimes that's used for character development. Sometimes that's an accident on the part of the author. But when it comes to authors like J.R.R. Tolkien and George R.R. Martin, they seem to do this thing where they don't ever do that. In fact, they stick to the standard and the planned arc of character development so closely that the arc actually makes sense. The development of the character, where they started, really, really makes sense. And I know some of you are probably thinking, yeah, of course, this happens all the time. This is naturally part of writing a character and character arcs. We see character arcs all over the place. But I think that there's an element beyond just that. There's something that they do with the characters that clearly defines them in a way that sets these boundaries so that either when they abide by those limitations and the things that they've previously set up, it 100% makes sense. Or even when they deviate from them, when it appears like they're breaking that character design, it also makes sense. In retrospect, we go, no, this is a conflict of their beliefs. This is a place where the things that were set up previously break down, and so it only makes sense that they break character in this moment and move in a different direction, and that creates a much more natural character arc. So I just wanted to get that out there to begin with, because in this episode we are going to see what I think is the beginning of an established pattern for two of our primary characters, both Bilbo and Gandalf. So I'm excited to talk about it. I know that was kind of a longer intro than usual, but I hope that sets the stage for where we're going with this episode. So let's get into it. So we're wrapping up the situation with the trolls. This is the next morning after they've already turned to stone. And if you remember, Gandalf remarked that the trolls must have a location that they've been hiding away in somewhere because they can't be out during the day. So they begin to search and see what they can find out about these trolls. And the first thing that I'm going to note here is that the trolls have stony boots. It says they soon found the marks of the trolls' stony boots going away through the forest. And I thought that interesting. What does that actually mean? Do they actually make shoes, boots, out of rock itself? I think that's probably unlikely, but maybe their boots were just stone-like, or maybe they were worn and from being underground and covered with dirt and things like that, they look stony. I'm not sure. It's an interesting little detail, though. And so they find this path, and then they find that it goes up a hill behind some bushes, and then we get a big door of stone leading to a cave, but they could not open it. Not though they all pushed, and Gandalf tried various incantations. And this is, I think, the first moment we get Gandalf actually using incantations. The idea here would be that he is reciting aloud phrases that could potentially open the door, which we see in much better detail later on in the story when they're trying to get into the Lonely Mountain, but also in The Lord of the Rings with Moria. All of these things have to do with, well, at least in this case, this is trolls, but the later ones have to do with dwarf locations. And the idea that the trolls may even have had the ability to seal a door with an incantation, with some sort of magical spell, is also interesting. Now, does that mean that trolls actually have that ability? Or maybe the trolls were working for somebody else who did, and Gandalf was suspicious of that? Or maybe this is just something that Gandalf does whenever he can't open a door. I don't know. It's an interesting thing, right? And then Bilbo pipes up And I think this is one of those moments where we start to get a sense of who Bilbo is in regards to his place in the party. Not who he is in regards to the Baggins versus Took thing or any of the details that we've learned so far. We're starting to find out and we're starting to see a pattern here of who Bilbo is when it comes to solving problems with the group. So far, he's tagged along. So far, he's been brave enough to try to be the thief that sneaks into the pocket of the troll, all of that stuff. And that's all well and good. But there is a regularly occurring thing that will be happening where Bilbo finds the solution to the problem when the dwarves and maybe even Gandalf doesn't. Bilbo becomes the most valuable member of the party multiple times over. And it's usually because he's paying attention to something nobody else is. Or he's clever in a way that nobody else is. In fact, I'm going to draw a comparison in this section between Bilbo's form of intelligence and Gandalf's form of intelligence. If I was to say who was smarter, it would be very difficult because you would have to define smarter in what way. Bilbo seems clever and maybe even lucky in a way that Gandalf isn't always. Gandalf, on the other hand, seems wise, and he seems to have a large expanse of knowledge over what we will eventually find out is a very long period of time, but he isn't clever in the same way that Bilbo is, even though he's freaking Gandalf. You get what I'm saying. So Bilbo comes across this key, and it's actually fairly large, but William had thought it was small because, of course, he's so big. And Gandalf responds, "Why on earth didn't you mention it before?" Because he found it clearly a little while back. I think this is one of those moments. It's another one of those grumpy Gandalf moments. Shirts up on Patreon. But it's one of those moments I think is supposed to be humorous for our little readers. You know, the old guy going, "Why didn't you mention that before?" So he grabs the key and he opens the door. And we get this look for the first time into a den of evil. And again, there are parallels here. A door that they can't quite figure out how to open. A den of some terrible, horrible, evil creature or creatures. And then a treasure hoard. This is a little moment that is very similar to breaching the Lonely Mountain. Now, the one thing that is distinctly different here is that this hoard no longer has an owner. The trolls have already been killed. And at this point in the story, neither we or the characters in the story would expect that when they enter the dragon's den, the Lonely Mountain, that the dragon will somehow not be alive anymore. And of course, we have to get further in the story to find out what happens there. So not only are we getting these setups for these characters, like Bilbo being clever, but we're also getting foreshadowing for what potentially could happen when they get to the Lonely Mountain. It's like a little tiny moment that's very similar. So what is a troll cave like? Well, we find out that there are bones on the floor. My guess is that this is probably some animal bones, but also the remains of the people that they supposedly feasted on from the village. There's a nasty smell in the air, and there is some food, as it says here, jumbled carelessly on shelves and on the ground among an untidy litter of plunder and all sorts of brass buttons and pots full of gold coins standing in a corner. There were lots of clothes too, hanging on the walls, too small for the trolls, and I'm afraid they belong to victims. So I think we can assume that those bones also belonged to the victims. And then there's, of course, swords and other things. So I think this is interesting. Even though the trolls were eating people and leaving their clothes hung on the wall, it seems like I would just toss them in a corner or something, right? Or maybe burn them for fire when you need something to light, if that even works. I don't know. I don't burn clothes very often. But it's notable here that they also had other food, which I'm assuming they stole from the village. So trolls aren't just cannibals. Well, I guess, is it a cannibal if you're eating something that's a slightly different species? Or does it only matter that they are persons? I don't know. But they don't just eat people. they eat other things too. So if they found already prepped meats or vegetables or fruits, then the trolls weren't beyond hoarding that food as well in order to make sure that they had more to eat. And of course, it's a little bit weird to trust to that food because you don't know where it's been. It's also just been sitting in the cave on a floor in some instances. But remember, one of the horses went in the water. They already lost some of their food to the river that they were crossing. So they were looking for anything they could find. And boy, did they find some stuff. They found food. They also found some weapons. And I love the idea that they are finding what is the equivalent of legendary gear in a troll cave. This kind of scene is the kind of scene that clearly in my mind inspired Gary Gygax with Dungeons and Dragons or many video games that have come after this. It only makes sense that when you're on your adventure and you take out the monsters that are a few levels above you, that you get some sort of special prize in the end. And so here we get beautiful scabbards and jeweled hilts on these two swords that Gandalf and Thorin each pick up. And of course, we later find out that those are actual weapons crafted by the elves of the First Age in Gondolin. And if you've been listening to this show, you know how crazy that is. I mean, think about it. At the time of the publishing of The Hobbit, nobody had any idea outside of Tolkien and a very small circle of individuals about the history of this world, about the Silmarillion, about the ages of the world, about the conflict between the elves and Melkor, about the smithing quality of the Noldor and the kinds of things they were crafting in the First Age of the world. And here in this troll horde are weapons crafted thousands of years older by smiths who have the ability to make weapons that will last the test of time. These weapons are as effective in the Third Age when fighting evil creatures as they were in the First. And we'll get a better, more up-close description of these weapons later on. But for here, for right now, this is what we get. Gandalf and Thorin each took one of these, and Bilbo took a knife in a leather sheath. It would have made a tiny pocket knife for a troll, but it was as good as a short sword for a hobbit. "These look like good blades," said the wizard, half drawing them and looking at them curiously, "but were not made by any troll, nor by any smith among men in these parts and days. But when we can read the runes on them, we shall know more about them." And so at this very moment, Gandalf already knows that these are clearly elven weapons. He hasn't said it, and he hasn't said exactly where they come from, because they could come from many different places, especially if they're from the First Age. And so he's going to hold off and tell us more about it later. But for right now, he clearly is telling us, the reader, that these are legendary rewards for a quest that was just completed. And like any good quest, the party has to take a rest afterwards. Wow, that rhymed. I should write a song about questing and resting. So we'll get to that after we go thank our patrons, so don't go anywhere. All right, here we are in the middle of the show. I hope you are enjoying this slightly different look at things. I also hope that you are enjoying the Daily Drive episode that I dropped recently. I have more of those coming out, and if you all enjoy them, and if the sound quality isn't too terrible, I try to use the voice cleaner stuff and remove some of the background noise and things like that. And it, of course, makes my voice sound a little weird, but I hope it's good enough. Let me know if you're enjoying those, and let me know if you have any what-if scenarios that I should be tackling in future episodes. I hope you enjoy them, because it's a kind of a fun way for me to maximize my time while in a car in order to create more content and give you all more things to listen to. So let me know if you're enjoying that stuff. Also, we have to welcome our newest patrons from patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. Welcome to Mother of Sam. I'm not sure if that's Sam the Hobbit or if that's somebody who else is just named Sam, but welcome. CT7567 and Nicholas J, welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you are here. Thank you for the support. And I also have to shout out our VIP patrons. Here we go. Let's go through the list. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Aragorn III, Atle Morton, or Atle? I know I've been mispronouncing your name. For some reason, I swapped the T and the L. Thank you so much for being here. Austin C., Azzle Razzle, Barney D., Bo, Brandy D., Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., David M., Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gimli A Break, Gemma D., Jezzer, Josh W., KTS, Capenna, Lori B., Mason Weathertop, Nick K., Nostrils of Sauron, Richard J., Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Sam B., TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much for all of your support. Also, I would be reading out a new review, but the website I use to look at that stuff is under maintenance, so I can't actually see them right now. So if you'd like to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, I'll read that out on a future episode of the show. You can also rate the show on Spotify, share it with your friends, and let me know what you are excited about with the Rings of Power, because we are just a few weeks away, and I'm so excited. This next season looks so much better than the first one, and you know that I didn't have... There were some issues with the first season, although overall I did enjoy it. I think they're improving, and I think it's going to be amazing. So that's just my gut. Maybe I'm wrong, but we'll find out. Let me know your thoughts as well. I'd love to continue talking about this on the Discord and also in the Patreon, if you're one of our patrons over on patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. Thank you everybody for the support. All right, let's move on with the rest of the episode. Here we go. So our party continues to explore the cave. They basically snatch up anything that seems of value to them, including things like bread and cheese, ale, bacon, the swords, and the gold. Because, of course, you don't want to just leave that in a cave for anyone else to find. And then they have breakfast. They get out of the stinky troll cave, as Philly notes. It's a horrible smell, Philly says. And they go eat breakfast. They prepare this food. They've been very hungry. They've spent the whole night awake. And then they decide that they're finally going to sleep. And this is interesting. They're not sleeping at night. They're sleeping through most of the morning in order to continue traveling because they're so exhausted. And it makes sense. If you just had to fight a bunch of trolls and were up all night doing it, you would be exhausted too. And then after they sleep, they take the pots of gold. They use their ponies. And then they find a place near the river and they dig some holes and they hide the treasure, kind of like in a pirate story. And then they put many great spells over them. That's the actual quote. Many great spells. And it doesn't say Gandalf did this. It says they, because it's talking about everything from the previous sentence, including the ponies and carrying the gold. And they were doing all of these things. So I don't know specifically if this is just something Gandalf does and maybe he's the only one in the party who did it, or if the dwarves themselves actually cast spells of protection. And this goes back historically to the kinds of things that people would have done historically. And oftentimes spells of protection were, again, enchantments. They are almost like prayers. It's almost like saying something like, if somebody comes and takes this treasure who is not of our party, they will be cursed or something like that. It's not supposed to be seen in the way of if somebody, for example, stumbles upon this treasure, then they won't be able to dig the ground or get it out, or they will be injured upon trying to pick it up. It's nothing really like that. It's not like laying a trap in that sort of way. It's more of an incantation for disguise, this prayer for making sure that nobody even notices it, or if they do, that bad things will come to them later, that sort of thing. That's traditionally how that would have been used in our own world, and I assume that Tolkien, of course, being a scholar of all of these things, would have thought of it more in that way as well. So think of it like that. Don't think of it like it's a magical trap that gets sprung in and immediately kills everybody or freezes them in place or something like that, like you would see in a video game. And so after they get done with all of this, Thorin asks Gandalf a question. He says, "Where did you go to, if I may ask?" And it makes sense that Thorin is the one who asks this because he is the most prominent of the dwarves. He is the most important. He is the most authoritative, and he's the most responsible for their safety. So he's wondering, where is Gandalf going? What is he doing? And I don't think he's suspicious thinking that Gandalf is up to no good. He's more just curious. Like, what did you go do? And Gandalf says, and this is the moment that I'm alluding to at the beginning of this episode that sets a standard for who we can expect Gandalf to be. And in typical Gandalf fashion, he gives just as much information as is needed and no more. But it says so much. He responds and says, to look ahead. And then Thorin says, and what brought you back in the nick of time? Gandalf says, looking behind. And these simple words, just two words, look ahead, look behind, looking behind, tell us so much about Gandalf. Gandalf is constantly looking ahead and looking behind. Gandalf's role, not only through The Hobbit, but through The Lord of the Rings, is to plan for how to handle the terrible things that are happening in this world and to fight back. And the way that he fights back is through relationships with other people. Other people who are not as powerful as him, they are not as wise as he is, and yet he has empathy. He has a love and an empathy for these other peoples who are flawed. They have problems, and yet he stands with them anyway. Gandalf in these stories is a counter, a direct counter to Sauron. And in that way, they are, in a few different ways actually, reflections of each other. They're both powerful entities. They're both Maia originally, and they both have the ability to plan and plot things. They're very good at coordinating and planning and all of that kind of thing. So they have a lot of similarities there, but they are distinctly different in one major way, and that is how they view power. Sauron views power as domination, as putting himself above everyone else and viewing everyone else as lesser and as only tools to use fear and manipulation to get whatever he wants out of them. Gandalf, on the other hand, who is superior to all of these other peoples because he is actually from a stock of creation that is a level above where they are, views everyone else not as inferiors, but as equals. He treats them fairly and with empathy. And it's that empathy that truly builds Gandalf's strength, because that empathy brings with it something Sauron will never understand. And that is the respect and love of other individuals and what that can do to motivate the people around you to greatness. So Gandalf is always looking ahead, but he's also always looking back at the people who are following him. He's always checking in. He knows that he is more powerful, that he is more capable, that he is more wise than the people around him. But he also knows that with that great power comes great responsibility. Now we've got Spider Gandalf. And it's important. It's important that we understand Gandalf this way. And so in the beginning of this section, we learn that Bilbo is clever. He's a problem solver. He's going to come up with a solution when everyone else falters, including Gandalf. And yet Gandalf, the thing about his personality that we will see reflected time and time again in the story, just like that for Bilbo, is that he is always looking ahead, but also behind. And so sometimes he's not there in the moment, but that's okay, because his strengths lie in looking ahead and looking behind. Bilbo is the one who's there in the moment. And the two of them together create a solution to so many of the problems that they're going to face in this story. And it's brilliant. It all comes together right here at the very end of chapter 2. It's all right there. And so this conversation continues, and Gandalf says, looking behind, and Thorin says, exactly, but could you be more plain? Because he doesn't really understand what he's saying and what he was actually doing. It's kind of a non-answer. Gandalf says, I went on to spy out our road. It will soon become dangerous and difficult. Also, I was anxious about replenishing our small stock of provisions. I had not gone very far, however, when I met a couple of friends of mine from Rivendell. Rivendell means elves. Gandalf came across elves. And again, it implies Gandalf's strength here of making friends, of being empathetic with other people. And then Bilbo asks, what's that? And of course, Gandalf, Grumpy Gandalf responds, don't interrupt. Another humorous moment for Grumpy Gandalf. You will get there in a few days from now if we're lucky and find out all about it. But anyway, basically he says, I met two of Elrond's people. They warned me that there were trolls that had come down from the mountains and were waylaying strangers. And so I had this immediate feeling that I was wanted back. Looking behind, I saw a fire in the distance and made for it. So now you know. Please be more careful next time or we shall never get anywhere. Thank you, said Thorin. And that's the end of chapter two. It ends with us getting a better understanding of who Gandalf and Bilbo are and who we can expect them to be as the story continues. And that's the brilliance of Tolkien's writing. It's so simple and yet so profound at certain times. Sometimes it's very complex and verbose, but other times, like this, it gives us such a simple understanding of these characters and who foundationally they are. Deep down, this is who they are in regards to the story. And we're going to see that develop. So I look forward to more episodes with you in the future. I hope you have a wonderful week. I hope you enjoy the Daily Drive episodes that I'll be putting up. And as always, reach out, jump on the Discord, share some thoughts. I'd love to hear from you. Have a wonderful week. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes or just search Robots Radio Discord or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.